No safe houses. Mon dismisses the option with a wave. No hiding in deep space. If there's any point at all in our survival, we won't prove it in isolation. Sion's first duty, as she sees it, is the safety of her senator. Mon knows this because Sion has said so. But Sion also knows when it's pointless to argue, and she doesn't argue now.
All right,
she says. We could try to contact ground forces in the Rim Worlds. Bit of a gamble, but it would be a start. Because that's what this means. Starting over. Exhaustion subsumes Mon like a rising tide. She remembers the metal case nestled between her feet. The 20 years of work in a courier package. She remembers her first meetings with Bale and the others, when she was practically a child and so certain of her own experience and ability. She had imagined toppling the Emperor in a matter of months, not decades. Not the Rimworlds, Mon says. Her voice is commanding, loud enough for the pilot to hear. He'll draw inspiration from her, even if Sion won't. We go to Coruscant. Heart of the Empire. Heart of the galaxy. The pilot swears. Sion hesitates, mentally assembling the pieces and searching for coherence. The Senate, she says. Disbanded or not, it's a powerful voice. And after Alderaan, the senators will have to back you.
Perhaps,
Mon says, and adds nothing more. Because while she's good at lying, she never did develop a taste for it. In another future, the rebellion will live on in the days after the annihilation of Alderaan and Yavin 4. Not just live, but grow. As the Empire's atrocities become public, and Mon Mothma and the Senate in exile kindle support. The destruction of Base One will prove a blow to the structure, but not the spirit of the Rebel Alliance. There will be a true revolution. Uprisings unlike any the galaxy has seen will erupt on 1,000 worlds. Then the Empire will respond. Every world that defies the Galactic Emperor will be destroyed. The space station, the planet killer, will be used, not as a threat, but as a weapon of absolute terror. The Emperor and his bitter old men will prove crueler than anyone imagined. How many worlds will die before blood quenches the rebellion's fire? Will Mon Cala's endless oceans boil? Will the thorn communes of Manthusa burn? Will the ancient cityscape of Dinan turn to ruins? Will 2, 3, 12, 100 worlds fall? The galaxy is large. The Empire is unimaginably strong. For its leaders, there is no sacrifice too great to ensure its survival. Mon will give up eventually, of course. She's not a monster. She's learned to stomach sending children into battle. But she'll never abide the loss of whole planets. Mon Mothma can't actually see the future. She used to know people who could. But the last of them is dead now, too. No word from base, Senator, Sion says. She's arranging a meal on a serving tray, stewed beans and bread, and a tin cup of steaming calf, all procured from who knows where. Utensils clink softly, and a loamy scent fills Mon's nostrils. We'll signal again in 90 minutes. For all we know, Private Harg still hasn't figured out the comm unit. Harg? What about Lentra?
Went to Scarif,
Sion says. She doesn't say, and didn't come back. The notion of eating makes Mon ill. How often has she dined while others fought for their lives? The wounds she sustains never bleed. She has no corporeal scars to assure her that she's suffered for her cause. She recognizes the indulgent self-pity in this line of thinking, but she can't entirely banish it. She eats. Xion does not. It's all right to mourn, Mon says softly. We may not have another chance for a while. Xion taps her left temple. Biochemical regulatory implant. It keeps my stress hormones in check. She doesn't look directly at Mon. Besides, most of my... the people I know are still on Yavin. Mourning would be premature. By now it might not be, Mon thinks, though she knows Xion is aware of this. Still, she likes hearing Xion act hopeful. It reminds her of Bale. Through the blur of sleeplessness, she imagines his ghost and asks, "Was it painful when Alderaan died? Did you know what was happening? Did you think we'd lost?" Mon finishes no more than half the meal. She prompts Xion multiple times until her aide finally dines on the beans and bread remaining, more eagerly than Mon did. "We should have waited for the princess," Mon says. "Extracted her as well." Xion only shrugs. "She wouldn't have come. And trying might have left us with no time to escape." "I owe her father," Mon says. "Bale owed you. So does she. She's paying off that debt now." Mon has heard reasoning like this before. It's reasoning that can excuse any number of deaths. And it almost works. But Mon has other reasons to wish Princess Leia had been evacuated. The girl is young, and the galaxy has enough bitter old masterminds trying to shape it to their respective visions. In another future, Mon will walk the hallways of the Imperial Palace. Her white robes, in contrast to the dark tile and the crimson armor of her escorts. Perhaps she will ache from bruises sustained in her capture. More likely, she will be in perfect health. After all, she will be there by choice. The Emperor will meet her in his throne room, not to interrogate her, though Mon has heard he conducts certain interrogations personally, but to look down upon her and smile that withered, wax-faced smile.
"Senator Mothma, it is so good to finally be reunited."
He'll say this or something equally unctuous. She will be at his mercy forever. Her rebel alliance, the revolution she built on a foundation of bones, will cease to be. The murder of Alderaan, the defeat at Yavin, and the surrender of its commander-in-chief will be blows the organization cannot recover from. There will be Imperial cleanup operations, but no more planets will die. Why should they, when the Emperor has everything he's ever desired? Mon will be humiliated. She will be asked to renounce her cause publicly, and she will do so. She knows the Emperor well enough to expect she won't be executed. Rather, she will be kept alive on the off chance he needs to use her as a warning to his enemies. In time, she will be forgotten. In time, her mistakes will be forgotten. Her arrogance will be forgotten. Her complicity in the deaths of billions on Alderaan will be forgotten. Mon Mothma is responsible for her own failures. How can she believe she has the right to start the cycle over again, to rebuild the same rebellion that was defeated once already? In this future, she will live her life in darkness. In time, perhaps someone else will find a better answer. Mon writes with furious urgency, tapping words into her datapad as her metal case trembles between her ankles. She needs to complete the speech before they reach Coruscant, though that isn't why she races through it. Instead, she's driven by the overwhelming need to confess, to disavow her life's work and all the horrors it has bred. The speech isn't one of her best, and it won't get much better. She doesn't have time to redraft. She doesn't have anyone to critique her style and rhetoric. She won't let Sion learn the truth until it's too late. She looks from the case at her feet to the cockpit, where Sion and the pilot are hunched over the main console. Carefully, she sets her data pad to the side and opens the case. She transfers its contents to the gap under her seat. Sion or the pilot will find the secrets of the Rebel Alliance stashed there after Mon is gone. They can judge how to use it all themselves. Like the princess, they're young enough to choose their own future. Their own means of rebellion. Mon has abrogated any right to choose for them. She's failed at her task. Maybe others will do better. Unless... No, she tells herself. There's no time left for dreams. Jan said it himself. Do what has to be done. She still has the rest of the journey to change her mind, to find another way. She doesn't believe she'll succeed. When laughter emerges from the cockpit, she can't entirely comprehend it. She hears Sion's voice before the pilot joins in. Mon furrows her brow as her aide rushes into the cramped passenger lounge.
We heard from Base One,
Sion says. Her eyes glitter wetly. And? Mon asks.
They destroyed the Death Star. We won.
In the very near future, Mon will reunite with her surviving colleagues in high command. The Alliance will rally in the wake of its extraordinary victory, and its message will spread like starlight to 1,000 worlds. Rebels too young to know democracy, regret, or a lover's kiss will strike at the Empire again and again under Mon's leadership. She will never speak of her Yavin 4 contingency plan. The conflict will not end swiftly. The destruction of the Emperor's space station will only amplify the violence. Mon will watch the carnage from safety, from hidden bases in the jungle and under sheets of ice, sending children to die with the swipe of a finger on a tactical map. If victory comes, and it may not, it may still all prove pointless. She may even go through this a second time, with a second space station. It will take many more years. But Mon believes in victory again. As her shuttle adjusts course, her newfound hope crushes her like gravity and steals the air from her lungs. She does not hesitate to delete her message of surrender, but she longs for its simplicity, the endless peace of submission to despair. A new scar is etched across her spirit now, the work of the Emperor's greatest weapon. She does not weep at her burden. She gives orders to Sion and steels herself for the years of war to come.
The Angle by Charles Sewell.
You ask me. Alderaan had it coming, Lando Calrissian said, playing it all high and mighty as long as they did.
So, you believe the rumors?
Jaff responded.
You really think the Imperials destroyed an entire planet?
Well, something turned Alderaan into a bunch of little rocks. And it seems like the Empire's style. You know what I mean, right?
Lando flicked his gaze across the table. Just a quick little scan across the pile of fleshy folds the Vorossian called a face. Jaff Baysan was strange-looking, even in a galaxy with no lack of strange. Lando wanted to catch his reaction to the last statement, but, you know, without being obvious about it. You didn't want the other guy to figure out he was being played. Jaff was no amateur, though. His face maintained the same bland expression, the Vorossian equivalent of a pleasant, non-committal smile that he'd kept on his face for the entire game so far. Lando and Jaff sat across from each other at a low table, drinks in front of them, surrounded on all sides by a silent audience. wealthy degenerates from all across the galaxy. Activity at the other gambling stations in the casino had slowed to a crawl as word spread of what was happening here. An actual game of click-clack between Lando Calrissian and Jaff Basan. Click-clack was named for the sounds made by a large insect native to the forests of the planet where the game was invented. The bugs called out to each other, click, and answered, clack. The sounds traveling for kilometers through the trees. And that was the game. Just a conversation. Each player got one card from a standard Sabacc deck. Then, for a little while, they just talked. Had a little chat about whatever they felt like. To an observer, click-clack usually seemed pretty light, pretty casual. It wasn't.
When the allotted time was up, each player pressed a single button on the table between them, locking in the one decision required by the game's rules, whether they thought their card was higher or lower than the other guy's. That was it. The entire thing.
You won by being right when your opponent was wrong. If you both guessed right, or both guessed wrong, the game was a push. But the house still took its 10% commission. The worst possible outcome. There was some dignity in losing. But when nobody won, but the house? Forget Alderaan. That would be a tragedy. The trick to click-clack was the conversation. You had to use those 10 minutes or so not only to try to figure out what your opponent had, high or low, but also get them to guess the way you wanted them to go. You had to figure them out and misdirect them at the same time. Lando loved it. If gambling could ever be called art, as far as Lando Calrissian was concerned, it absolutely could. Then click-clack was its highest expression. Jaff was a tough opponent, though. Lando didn't know much about Verossian physiology. Always a tricky situation, especially since humans were among the most common species in the galaxy. That made them underdogs in games like click-clack. Jaff probably knew what most human facial expressions signified, but Lando was flying blind. Trying to piece together what a little tremble of the antennae might mean, or a slow, languid blink of an ocular membrane. Still, you know, exhilarating.
What do you mean? Jaff said. Well, didn't the Empire get all up in your planet's business, too?
Jaff made the sort of wobbly snort that passed for a chuckle.
They are in everyone's business, aren't they?
Not mine, Lando said. I stay clear. That is my business.
Oh, really? Jaff said. I thought it was losing at cards.
A little held breath from the audience as they waited to see how Lando would respond. But insults were part of the game. Nothing to get all worked up about. Lando glanced around the room at the watchers. Beings from more than 20 different worlds, united by a single expression of rapt fascination. They were watching two masters at work, and they knew it. Lando grinned, self-deprecatingly, lifting one arm to the crowd, letting himself be the butt of the joke, giving the audience permission to laugh with him. He took over the moment, not watching Jaff's reaction. But of course, he was absolutely watching Jaff's reaction. And there it was. The tiniest flush of green on the folds of his neck. The same flush he'd seen when Lando had mentioned the Empire. Jaff Basan came from Veros, and Veros had once been an extremely wealthy planet. Technically, it was still a wealthy planet, but that wealth was now in the hands of the Empire. Instead of the bank accounts of the familial alliances that had ruled the planet for centuries, one of which was the venerable House of Basan. It had all happened decades ago, and Jaff was still rich, very rich, or he wouldn't have been allowed entry to this room at all. But there had to be a twinge when he thought about what had been taken from his family. Frustration, expressed in a spray of viridian across the gill-like fronds on his neck. The infuriating thing about Click-Clack was that having a high card wasn't always good, and low wasn't always bad. Lando's card was precisely in the middle of the deck. He couldn't even use the odds to help him. But that didn't matter, really. In Click-Clack, the cards were, in many ways, irrelevant. The game was about coming to a complete and thorough understanding of another being in the space of a single conversation. And if you couldn't manage that, you were lost. But Lando was not lost. He had Jaff dead to rights. He'd pieced together that little flush of green meant frustration. And he'd also seen it whenever he'd slipped references to things being high or tall or above into the conversation. Little signifiers meant to be perceived by Jaff as accidental, subconscious nudges to help him think Lando's card was on the high side. Every time he did it, another green flush. Which meant Jaff was annoyed. Which meant Jaff's card had to be high too, because it was hard for him to decide whether Lando's high card was higher than his high card. Put all of that together, and Lando's bet was easy. Low.
"Shall we?"
Lando said, gesturing toward the buttons on the table's surface, hidden from the other player by a small screen, which were used to indicate the high-low bet. Jaff nodded politely and moved one of his appendages behind his own screen. Lando kept his smile smooth and his breathing steady. No external signals for Jaff to read. But inside, he was already laughing. This was it, at last. With the credits he was about to win, he could pay off his more pressing debts, put some money down on a ship, get mobile again, see what sort of delights the galaxy had to offer a man of Lando Calrissian's unique abilities and sensibilities. He touched the button on the table, caressed it, savoring the moment. And then, a shout, a command uttered in the gravelly, compressed, inhuman tone that anyone living in the Empire's galaxy recognized immediately.
Hands in clear view. Anyone who moves will be shot. There will be no second warning,
the stormtrooper said. The room froze as everyone slowly turned to look at the squad of Imperial troops that had entered the little space. Five ordinary troops plus an orange pauldron sergeant. But also, somewhat unusually, a black-clad Imperial officer. Lando thought it was a lieutenant, but he couldn't be sure. He'd never bothered to memorize the rank insignia. The Calrissian policy with respect to Imperial officers was the same top to bottom. Avoid. The officer's face was cold, icy, clenched tight. It read to Lando like barely restrained rage. Anger at some great personal injury.
This is an illegal gambling establishment in violation of Imperial Statute 759.8. You are all ordered to vacate the premises immediately. Any credits you have deposited with the room's cashier are forfeit.
A rumble of discontent rippled the room. Everyone had money stashed with the cashier in exchange for the credit chits they used to gamble. Lando himself, in particular, had the very large wager he had placed on the Click-Clack game. Thousands of credits carefully amassed over long nights at gambling tables much less reputable than this one, scraped together from gigs that were so far beneath his talents that it almost physically hurt to take them, about to evaporate like smoke. Movement in the crowd as a large robed gentleman stepped forward, rings on his fingers glittering in the low light. Heavy jowls lifting to lavish a generous smile on the presumed lieutenant. Luck Luck Friedal, owner of the casino, and a man with potentially more to lose that evening than any gambler in his establishment.
My friend, is there a mistake?
Friedel said.
Everything here is legal. People are just having a nice evening.
Not anymore. This is over,
the officer said, his tone colder than the dark side of an ice moon. The smile on Friedel's face wavered just a touch.
Oh, no, man, Lando thought. Don't do it. Don't you see the man's just looking for an excuse?
But Friedel apparently did not see, or decided the risk was worth it. In the desperate hope that this obvious misunderstanding could be cleared up, that there was a way to salvage his reputation and his business before word spread that Luck-Luck Friedel couldn't keep his illegal gambling den clear of Imperials. Friedel leaned in closer to the Imperial officer and uttered a few low words. Lando couldn't hear them, but he had a pretty good idea of what was being said.
Hey, man! I'm paid up this month. What the hell are you doing? Don't we have an arrangement?
Lando saw the officer's face turn even colder, which he would have said was impossible. He saw Friedel pressing his case, saw the troopers taking a tighter grip on their rifles. He saw it all and knew exactly what was about to happen. Lando had a blaster under his cape at the small of his back. Just a little thing, but it packed a wallop. He was better with it than anyone in this casino knew, than anyone alive knew, in fact. He could take out the lieutenant, the stormtrooper commander, maybe even one of the underlings before they reacted. And by the time they did, some of the other illicit weaponry in the room would be out from under cloaks and hidden holsters. These idiot Imperials had no idea how outnumbered they actually were in here. They'd all be gunned down in no time. Someone just had to make the first move. Someone had to play hero. Lando Calrissian loved heroes. They thought the galaxy owed them something, like they mattered somehow in some bizarre way that meant the fundamental rules of reality were tilted in their favor. Heroes believed, honestly believed, that things would just work out for them. Heroes were Lando's favorite opponents at the gambling table. The worse the odds got, the bigger they bet. Because heroes were suckers. Lando slowly, carefully moved his hands up above the edge of the click-clack table. They were empty. The Imperial officer nodded once, tightly. Two quick shots from a blaster rifle, and then a thud, as Luck-Luck Friedel hit the floor. A smoking hole where his heart had been. Lando would have to find his next game somewhere else. The lieutenant looked out at the room. The murder he'd just ordered appeared to have done exactly zero to cool the rage seething behind his eyes.
Disperse!
He said. Lando's eyes shifted to the safe across the room, where Friedel kept the wagers on the various games until they were paid out. Millions of credits in that safe, many of which had just minutes ago belonged to Lando Calrissian. Lando closed his eyes for a moment, sighed deeply, then dispersed. Another bar, across the city, in a less desirable zone. The sort of place Lando had sincerely hoped he would never have to set foot in again. A place where work could be found for individuals with unique abilities, sensibilities, and moralities. Work had suddenly become very important. Lando needed a gig to make up those credits he'd just lost. And quick, or he'd be in trouble. More trouble. So much for hope, he thought, stepping through the door, immediately suffused by the miasma of spilled drinks and dead dreams that places like this always shared. Lando walked to the bar, sensing the eyes of almost every being in the place watching him. He owed debts to at least half of them, raging from credits to blood. He reached the bar, then turned around and smiled.
Hey, guys, long time, he said. How about a round on me?
The bartender, of a species with arguably too many eyes, tapped Lando's shoulder.
You buying a round for the bar? How you gonna pay for it, Calrissian?
He said.
Put it on my tab, O'Cool, Lando said, not turning.
Your tab? Your tab?
O'Cool said, his tone rising into an aggrieved whine that could pierce Durasteel.
You honestly think there's credit for you in this bar? After...
Lando pulled a credit chip from his pocket and placed it down on the bar, doing it theatrically, making sure plenty of people saw him do it.
That should handle it. Everything I owe you and the round for the house.
O'Cool's attitude mellowed considerably after that. And more important, it meant Lando was safe. At least for the time it took for the bar's patrons to obtain and consume their drinks. You don't shoot the guy buying the booze, usually. Lando moved toward the end of the bar, where a man sat reading from a datapad. Lando joined the man, lifting his glass to his mouth.
Nice gesture, Lobot said. So you won?
Lando drained his drink, a barely drinkable local brandy. But what could you expect, really? And set the glass down on the bar, signaling to O'Cool to bring him another.
I'm gonna need you to cover this next one, Lou, and all the many others I plan to consume this fine evening. Those were my last few credits. Your man Lando is officially skinned.
Lobot's mouth tightened in an all-too-familiar note of resignation.
I told you that click-clack game was a bad idea. Too hard to calculate the odds. Too messy.
It wasn't the game. I had the game. Bunch of Imperials busted in. Killed Fried Dog. Ran us all out of there. Technically, I didn't lose. Let's be clear about that. But they confiscated my buy-in. Lost my credits. Kept my skin. The Lando Calrissian story, just like always.
Lobot raised an eyebrow, the metal implants on either side of his bald head flashing rapidly as he processed this new information.
You're kidding, he said. Frydol paid up every month, right on time. It was a point of pride for him. He ran the cleanest illegal backroom casino in the city. That's why he could bring in big fish, and also the smaller fish.
Lobot lifted his own glass. Water, of course. Lobot never drank or consumed anything that might cloud his thoughts, for fear it might allow his Imperial-issue implants the window they needed to finally take over his mind. The things were useful, especially when it came to gambling and calculating odds, but they extracted a price, no doubt about it. He tilted his glass toward Lando in a mock toast.
Such as you...
Lando ignored the comment and took a sip from his fresh drink. The bartender was hovering, waiting to see if new credits were forthcoming, and Lando waved him away with a little shooing motion.
The Imperials were riled up, Lando said once O'Cool was out of earshot. Furious, even. And it wasn't just stormtroopers. They had a ranking officer with them, too. Don't know what happened, but...
I do. Lobot said. They're trying to assert their authority. Get a little pride back.
Pride? What the hell are you talking about?
Lobot called out to the bartender.
Oh, cool. Can you run that feed again?
The bartender nodded amiably and reached for a control stick for the large holoscreen mounted above the bar.
Sure,
O'Cool said.
You know, I've watched that thing 10 times, and I'm still not sick of it.
Grainy footage appeared on the screen, sharpening up after a few initial bits of static. It looked like it was shot from the point of view of a starfighter. something long-nosed zipping through space.
What is this?
Lando asked.
The Rebellion just leaked it on the Darknet. It's getting play all over the place.
Not another one of their propaganda clips. I wish they'd give it a rest. The more they shout about their stupid cause, the less interesting it gets. That's just basic psychology. You'd think they'd figure that out.
Just watch,
Lobot said, his voice quiet and his eyes focused on the holoscreen. So Lando watched. It was footage of a space battle. A bunch of X-Wings and a few other fighters of various models, all of them looking like they should have been scrapped years ago, deploying against the biggest space station he'd ever seen. A huge gray sphere, almost like a miniature moon, bristling with turbo-laser defense turrets.
What is that thing?
He asked.
They call it the Death Star,
Lobot answered.
A planet killer, if you believe the rumors. How they blew up Alderaan.
Lando watched the fighters make their attack runs. Watched the X-Wings being picked off by the endless swarm of TIE fighters. Watched a bunch of heroes die the way heroes always died. Suckers. One and all.
Why would they release this?
Lando said, taking another slug of the increasingly drinkable brandy.
Do they want us to feel sorry for them? Who's to say this is even real footage? Both sides put out these propaganda pieces all the time, and...
And then, Lando knew it was real. Because another ship had appeared on the screen. A very, very familiar ship. A Corellian YT-1300 light freighter. Old, sure. Maybe a little banged up here and there, but still beautiful. She was still beautiful.
That's my ship,
he said, rising out of his seat a bit.
That's the Millennium Falcon.
He watched, stunned, his drink halfway to his mouth, as the Falcon swooped in from out of frame, behind a trio of TIEs. One a little modified, maybe a custom job that were trailing some X-Wings running through some kind of trench on the Death Star's surface. Its quad lasers fired, and it picked them off, vaporizing two and sending the last one, the custom, spiraling away into space. The ship, his ship, pulled up and flew away out of frame. Lando felt more than sensed everyone in the bar leaning forward, as if they were waiting for something to happen.
Wait, can you run that back for a second?
O'Cool paused the feed to a few groans from around the room and looked at Lando incredulously.
This is nothing, Calrissian. The best part's coming up.
Come on, just run it back for me.
Lando gave his best smile, the very best one, the one he reserved for extremely special occasions. The smile that promised whatever the recipient might want or need. Credits, friendship, protection, short-term or long-term love. The wonders of the galaxy itself. If only they would do what the owner of the smile wanted. The Calrissian Special. The bartender shook his head, but rewound the footage. Of course he did.
Stop! Lando said. Right there.
He watched it again. The Millennium Falcon saving the day, then zooming up and away.
Again,
he said. O'Cool didn't even protest this time, just ran it back. Lando had been sure the first time he'd watched it, but needed the next two playthroughs to process what he'd seen. But there was no doubt in his mind. The tactics, the maneuvers, he'd seen it all before. No one flew the Falcon as well as Lando Calrissian. But one man came as close as anyone could.
Han Solo was flying that ship, he said.
Looks like, Lobot said.
But that is impossible,
Lando said. He was dimly aware of the footage continuing, of an enormous explosion of cheers in the bar, cheers that would probably get everyone in here killed if there were any Imperials within earshot. But he wasn't really paying attention. What was Han Solo doing with the Rebellion? And not just, say, smuggling for them. That'd be fine, sure. A gig was a gig, and fuel wasn't free. But this? Han was attacking an Imperial superweapon. It just didn't make sense. Lando knew a lot of people, all across the galaxy. It was sort of his trademark. But very, very few people knew him. He could count them on one hand. Lobot, maybe a few others, and Han Solo. He'd have said that was mutual. He'd even have said they were the same, morally speaking, more than anyone else in the galaxy. They were out for themselves, because no one else was. And then this Death Star thing. Now, Lando could understand helping people out from time to time. That made sense. Never know when you might need to call in a favor. But this? This was lunacy. It was like doubling your bet in Sabacc when the other guy had the idiot's array. It was like kicking a sleeping rancor. It wasn't just pushing your luck. It was shoving it off a cliff and laughing while it hit every rock on the way down. The Rebellion was a lost cause. The Rebels were heroes, with all that implied. They were doomed, because the Empire was the House, and the House always wins. And yet, there was the Millennium Falcon, his ship, right in the thick of one of the ugliest battles he'd ever seen. Lando would have bet every credit he had, used to have, that Han Solo was neither a hero or susceptible to the sort of nonsense ideologies heroes subscribe to. But there he was, heroing it up. Troubling. Lando stared moodily up at the screen. The bartender had started the clip over, and he watched the heroes start their impossible attack once again. He tried to understand, and couldn't. He couldn't see the angle in it. Why would Han do this? Lando turned to look out at the bar and lifted his glass.
"To the memory of the greatest smuggler I ever knew," he shouted, to some half-hearted cheers from the other patrons.
He looked back at Lobot and pointed at the screen where Han Solo was once again risking Lando's ship, his precious, beautiful Millennium Falcon, for no reason he could figure.
"If I ever do anything like that, shoot me."
"No problem," Lobot said.
As Lando watched the Death Star explode, he considered the one rule of confidence men, tricksters, gamblers, and scam artists the galaxy over. If you can't see the angle, it means you're the one being played. You are, in fact, the sucker. Lando sat and thought, and drank drinks he had no money to pay for, and wondered what he was missing.
By Whatever Sun, E.K. Johnston. Story by E.K. Johnston and Ashley Eckstein. Miara Larte breathed in and remembered how much she loved real air. Sure, a large part of her heart was in the skies and the void of space beyond it. Trained in an A-wing cockpit before transitioning to an X-wing, and eventually a cruiser, but nothing recycled through a ship's O2 scrubbers could match good green air planetside. Even now, in the wake of battle and horror, one or two deep breaths was enough to steady her. "Is now really the best time for this?" Jessamine was red-eyed, but her voice was clear, and Miara couldn't smell any alcohol on her. Her second-in-command was a professional to the end, it seemed. "They have to do something," murmured one of the new gunners. Hester or Heaton's or something like that. He'd been assigned to Miara recently. Like her, he had been away from Alderaan when the Death Star attacked. Unlike her, he hadn't been with his shipmates at the time. Behind them, rank after rank of rebel soldiers filed into lines. Miara and her Alderaanian crew had a place of privilege at the front, but that meant they had the longest wait while the room filled up. It was the first time they'd had to stand around and do nothing, so she had expected someone to crack. "It's just so..." Jessamine trailed off. Miara reached across the prescribed space between them and took her hand. "I know," she said. "There's nothing anyone can say. We've lost too much for that. But this reminds us that we didn't lose everything." Jessamine was quiet. Miara wondered if she'd said the right thing. As a captain, she was sure of it. But she hadn't been born on Alderaan, and sometimes those who had been took it personally when she claimed the planet as her own. It was bad enough when the planet still existed. Miara imagined that now, her grief might seem like a fresh insult, but Jessamine only nodded and drew herself up to attention. They didn't speak any further, but Miara could feel her crew all around her and knew that they would hold it together just a bit longer. At last, the great cavern at the rebel base on Yavin 4 was crammed full, though the orderly lines of uniformed troops belied the crush. Miara forgot sometimes how big the rebellion was. Their losses in the past few weeks had been near catastrophic, and yet here she stood, knees locked at parade rest, hands behind her back, shoulder to shoulder with what remained of the Alderaanian guard. What remained? Miara felt herself drift toward memory and pulled back sharply. She could get away with fidgeting in the crowd, the twisting of her fingers hidden against the palm of her hand, and the shifting of her weight concealed by her bent legs. But this was not the moment for her grief. The rebellion was quick and tireless, moving from mission to mission with very little downtime. Yet every now and then, a yawning pause would appear. Miara knew they were on the edge of one right now. This was not the first time she had lost a planet. But they were not there. Not yet. Lost a planet. Didn't quite cover it. Miara could go back to Rada if she wanted. See it from orbit. Walk the dead fields and go to the caves where Neera had saved her life with a stun blast. There was nothing left of Rada but the planet itself. There was nothing left of Alderaan but dust and memory, and what survivors remained spread out across the stars. Without turning her head, she looked sideways down the line of her crew. Crew. Once that word had meant family and farming. As a pilot, and later an officer, Miara found it meant a team, and a job to do in all the mess. Her people looked good, which was what she'd expected. Every line of their uniforms was crisp, and their helmets gleamed. In the bright sun of the Yavin 4 morning, no bleariness or signs of unprofessionalism remained, despite the fact that many of them had been up late the previous night. The colony here welcomed refugees from any world savaged by the Empire, places like Fest, Rada, Jeddah, and now Alderaan. There was no shortage of understanding, no shortage of means by which to remember the names beyond counting, and a world that was no longer a world at all. Antilles, who had scooped them up. Organa, who had given them a home. Organa, who had given them a mission. Organa, who had stood here before them and had given them hope. All eyes had drawn to Leia, even though the ranks of rebels had turned to face each other. Her small form, clad in a pristinely white dress, was impossible to miss against the unrelieved gray of the cavern walls. More than that, she was compelling in the way her mother had been, and gentle in the manner of her father. And even the most disciplined of gazes shifted to her, an orbit around a star. Miara had heard the whispers, "Ice princess, cold." But she could find no fault in how Leia chose to carry herself. The rebellion had demanded nearly everything of the princess. If she wanted to keep her grief private, Miara was not about to criticize. Miara's own grief bubbled up again at the thought of what the princess had lost. And again, as Leia must be doing, in full view of all those assembled, she forced it back down. Soon, but not yet. Home had always been a place that Kaden made. On Rada, her sister had kept them fed and clothed by sheer force of will. On Alderaan, even in that first refugee camp, it had been easier. This felt like a betrayal, though Miara could not have said of whom, and it drove Kaden to restlessness, and eventually to a medical program in one of Alderaan's over-pretty cities. She served on a Republic medical frigate, and the sisters didn't get to see each other very often. At least Kaden was alive. Miara's path to the stars had been more direct. The A-Wing pilots, who had flown in Rada's skies as the moon was evacuated, had been high on adrenaline when Miara found them. 14, and despite the carnage she'd witnessed, fearless now that she was in the sky. And they had told her all kinds of stories on the way back to Alderaan. By the time they'd landed, Miara was certain she was going to fly again, but next time with her own hands at the controls. The Rebellion had been in dire need of pilots, so training had been easy to come by. Miara had risen through the ranks, thanks to her own quick thinking and the prodigious death rates pilots faced in the early days, before the various rebel cells had coalesced into something more stable. Her promotion to captain had come at the request of Senator Organa himself, though Queen Bria had been the one to formalize it in a ceremony in the capital, where several other promotions had been handed out. It was the first time Miara had seen the princess up close. At 10, Leia was tiny and filled with dignified fury, a seemingly perfect mix of the senator and queen both. Miara had been young for a promotion, but she had understood why she received the honor the moment her first classified mission had come in. There was no mistaking the fulcrum symbol attached to it. She'd had to tell Kaden in person, words chosen carefully to avoid compromising a valuable secret. They would need more pilots again now. So many had died at Scarif and in the battle against the Death Star. Imperial defectors were already showing up, horror woken by the carnage the Empire's now-destroyed superweapon had wreaked. Yes, there would be bodies for cockpits, hands for the controls, souls to stretch the limits of speed and agility, bending X-Wing to will. Music sounded from somewhere, a horn pulling Miara out of memory and musing, and back to the cavern with the rest of her crew. She heard Jessamine's breath catch as she recognized the song. Another piece of Alderaan the Empire had not ruined. It was against protocol, and awkward given that Jessamine was currently standing behind her. But Miara reached back to her second-in-command again. For a brief moment, Jessamine's fingers grasped hers, and then Miara returned to attention. If it made Skywalker or Solo nervous to walk the entire length of the cavern with the eyes of the Rebellion on them, they didn't show it. Miara assumed the Wookiee was fine. She hadn't met Solo at all, had only heard what he'd done after the fact, but she'd been in the briefing when Skywalker had spoken up. He'd made her feel old, made her think of a girl on a little moon, building bombs because she could, eager to fight in a battle she didn't yet understand the true scope of. That was the difference the Rebellion made. It had taken that girl and trained her, made her better, and given her the tools she needed to survive. She had passed along as much of what she knew as she could, to her crew, to the other pilots, to the not-quite-random idealists she'd ferried about the galaxy on those missions she wasn't supposed to talk about. She had been alone in the end on Rada, and she had been out of materials to explode. But she wasn't alone anymore. Neither was Skywalker, though she had no idea what he'd become as a result of it. The trio passed in front of her, and climbed the stairs to stand before Leia, and what remained of the Alliance High Command. As one, the rebels on the floor of the cavern turned, facing front toward the princess again. The music grew quiet as Skywalker and Solo bowed to receive the medals the princess hung about their necks. Miara could tell by the way Leia's mouth twitched that Solo must have pulled a face at her, but the princess remained cool under the scrutiny of hundreds. The light gleamed off her necklace, a traditional Alderaanian piece, Miara was sure. She wondered who had gotten it off the planet and how it had found its way to Yavin 4. There was a shuffle on the platform as a little astromech unit pushed its way forward to stand beside the princess's gleaming protocol droid. It chirruped. Oddly cheerful for a droid, Miara thought, just as the music swelled again, so only those at the very front of the cavern heard it. Everyone could see Skywalker laughing, though, as he, Solo, and the Wookiee turned around to face the crowd. The Wookiee roared as cheering broke out. Miara took another look to her side and saw tears streaming down Jessamine's face. Her second-in-command looked at her long enough for a quick nod. This was why it had to be now. Why they had to stand in this place, on this planet, and celebrate what they had, while remembering what they had lost. It was for the balance of it. The good measured out to offset the bad, but neither of them forgotten or erased. When Miara looked back to the platform, Leia was smiling, her face radiant as she stood at the center of attention. It wasn't a political smile. Miara had seen enough of those to know them. It was real. Miara felt something in her own chest unclench, freeing the emotions she had been holding back since Alderaan had disappeared in a blaze of fire, unsure if she was entitled to feel them. Rada was gone. Alderaan was gone. Her sister lived. She lived. She had her crew and her ship, and soon she would have a mission again. She stood on Yavin 4 and breathed green air. With grief on her cheeks and hope in her heart, Miara Larte added her voice to those in the cavern who celebrated the living and remembered the dead. It would be a long night, she knew. She had lived long nights before. But in the morning, by whatever sun, she would get up and she would rebel.
Quills, by Tom Engelberger. At last it is time. I have heard every version of the story, viewed every holocron, and studied every artifact. A lifetime of preparation has readied me for this noble duty. May the Force be with me as I begin the sacred task of writing in the Journal of the Wills. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, I mean, it's not really that far away, is it?
What are you talking about?
Far, far away? I'm saying it's far, but not far, far. I mean, if anything, I'd say it's a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Yeah, well, the rest of the Wills asked me to write this, not you, so it's going to say, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it is a period of civil war.
A period? Wow, you really like to keep things vague, don't you?
Good grief. What do you want me to put? It's a Thursday afternoon of civil war?
No, that's stupid. Maybe the problem is that passive voice.
It is a...
kind of weak. You should really start with an action verb.
It's the first sentence, dude. If you nitpick every single sentence of this journal, we aren't even going to get to the battles.
All right, fine, keep it. Could be better, but...
Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. The Empire and the Rebels?
Yeah.
Already? What about the Republic?
What about it?
You're just gonna skip over the Republic. Don't tell me you're skipping the Clone Wars and all that stuff.
Well, yeah.
Well, what about Anakin and Padme and the sand and...
I figured I could just sort of make some mysterious references to all that.
Mysterious references? What about Darth Maul? He's just gonna be a mysterious reference?
Actually, I'm not sure. I wasn't really planning on mentioning him.
Not mention Darth Maul? Darth Maul?
No.
Oh, next you're gonna tell me that you were planning to mention Captain Rex, Ahsoka, Ventress, Cad Bane, Savage Opress, Jar Jar Binks, and the Mandalorian.
Well, I guess I could always go back and tell their stories later.
Out of order? That's just gonna confuse everybody.
I think they'll figure it out.
Uh-huh, right. Wait, I know. Maybe you could add numbers to the beginning of each part. You know, like, maybe this one starts out a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, Episode 4.
That seems kind of...
Ooh, I got an idea. What if you made it IV, huh? That would be fancier. And you could give each episode a title, like, ooh,